I have more fun during practice. I enjoy the drills and the scrimmages, the opportunity to get better and help my teammates get better. I'm not interested in going pro after I graduate, which pleases my family to no end, because Hayward De Laurentiis's don't become professional athletes. They become lawyers. Next fall, I'll be attending Harvard Law like every other member of my family. I'm cool with that, and I have no doubt I'll be good at it. The De Laurentiis charm I inherited from my dad pretty much guarantees I'll be winning over judges left and right. What else am I doing wrong? Hunter sounds more curious than pissed. I grin at him. Tell you what, how about some one-on-one sessions this week? I'll see if Coach will sign off on extra ice time. Seriously? I would really appreciate that, actually. Thanks. I interrupt him. But only if you agree to quit talking about hockey for the rest of the night. I gesture to the packed bar. Look around. It's a hot girl banquet in here. Pick the one you like and feast, idiot. Hunter laughs, but his dark eyes gleam as he takes in the view. Several chicks respond to his attention with DTF smiles. But rather than wave them over, he glances at me. Or rather, at my neck, and snorts. Actually, maybe you should introduce me to the wildcat you hooked up with last night. Ms. Hickey seems like fun. I stiffen. No way am I letting this kid anywhere near Allie. He might be young, but he's well on his way to becoming an even bigger player than I am. Then again, maybe it isn't Hunter I should be worried about. After last night's performance, Allie Hayes proved that she's fully capable of leaving her mark on a man. Jesus, that girl can fuck. Damn, and now my dick is semi-hard. It's been doing that all day, chubbing out every time I think about Allie. It was the hottest hookup I've had in a long while. Hell, my wrists are still sore from being tied to the bed. But it's the kind of sore that makes me want to do it again. Tapping the same ass more than once isn't usually my style, but right now my dick is aching to bury itself in Allie's naughty pussy again. Sorry, superstar, not happening, I tell him. Find your own wildcat. Fine. Grinning, he gives the room another scan. Oh yeah, I think I know who I'm going home with tonight. I follow his gaze to the long wooden counter, where a tall brunette has her back turned to us, and she leans forward to order a drink. She's in a short black skirt and high heels, with long brown hair falling down her back in waves. The male bartender is damn near drooling, his hungry eyes peering down her shirt, which tells me she must have a great rack. All I can see is her ass, though, and it's pretty fantastic. Normally I'd be all over the brunette, but I'm not in the mood to score tonight. My mind keeps drifting back to Allie, and Allie's pussy, and her tits. Man, her tits were incredible. A perfect handful, with pale pink nipples that went harder than icicles when I sucked on them. I sigh and do some strategic rearranging in my crotchal region. I've gotta quit thinking about last night, for Christ's sake. God knows Allie is doing her best to forget it. What do you think? Hunter asks me. I shift my gaze away from the brunette. She might be a little out of your league. I'm a hockey player, nobody's out of my league. Truth. I chuckle. That was the first thing I taught Hunter when I took him under my wing at the start of the season. But even so, the brunette has the sexiest body I've ever seen. A woman like that can have anyone in this bar, and I'm not sure freshman Hunter makes the cut, even if he is wearing a Breyer hockey jacket. Across the room, the chick we're admiring suddenly turns around. Just like that, my appreciation fizzles into disgust. Oh, hell no. Stay away from that one, kid. She's toxic. She doesn't look toxic to me, Hunter drawls. Naive bastard. Luckily, I know better. Sabrina James is undeniably gorgeous, but I'd pour hot wax on my balls before I hooked up with her. Well, before I hooked up with her again. Yep, been there, done that. Got the t-shirt. Someone jostles me from behind, and I turn to find Tucker approaching. His black and silver jacket is soaking wet, and so is his hair. Jesus! It's coming down hard out there. He does a full-body shake like a dog who's just scampered out of a lake. Hey, Fido, go dry off somewhere else, I order as cold droplets splash my face and hit me in the eye. Hunter doesn't even notice that Tucker is dripping water all over our shoes. He's too busy ogling Sabrina. Tuck follows the freshman's gaze. "Nice," he remarks, then turns to grin at me. "I take it you already called dibs?" I blanch. Not a chance, this Sabrina, bro. She already busts my balls in class on a daily basis. I don't need her busting them outside of school. Sabrina and I are both poli-sci majors on the pre-law path, so we share way too many classes for my peace of mind. We both applied to Harvard Law, too, which I'm not particularly happy about. The thought of spending two more years sitting in the same lecture halls as her makes suicide sound pretty appealing. "Wait, that's Sabrina?" Tucker says in surprise. "I see her around campus all the time, but I didn't realize she's the one you're always bitching about." "One and the same." His southern drawl rears up. "Damn shame. She sure is fine to look at." "What's the deal with you two?" Hunter pipes up. "She your ex?" I recoil again. "Fuck no." "So I won't be breaking the bro code if I make a move?" "You want to make a move, go nuts, but I'm warning you, that bitch will eat you alive." Sabrina's head turns sharply toward us. She probably has some kind of internal radar that goes off every time someone calls her a bitch. I bet it goes off a lot. As our gazes lock, she smirks at me, then flips up her middle finger before turning to talk to her friend. Hunter groans. "Well, there goes that. She won't give me the time of day now that she saw me with you. What'd you do to her anyway?" "Absolutely nothing," I say darkly. "Bullshit. A chick doesn't murder a guy with her eyes like that unless he's screwed up bad. Did you hook up with her?" Tucker snorts. "What do you think, kid? I mean, look at her." "Looks can be deceiving," I mutter. My roommate cocks his head in challenge. "So you didn't sleep with her?" A sigh slides out. "No, I did. But it was a long time ago. I'm pretty sure hookups have expiration dates. Like, after 3 years have gone by, it doesn't count anymore." The guys laugh. "Let me guess," Tucker says. "You didn't call her afterward." "No," I admit. "But in my defense, it's hard to call a chick when, one, she doesn't give you her number, and two, when you don't remember it happened." Hunter's jaw falls open. "How could you not remember that?" He's damn near salivating as he checks out Sabrina again. "We were both wasted. Trust me, she didn't remember much either." "So that's why she hates you?" Hunter presses. I wave a hand. "Nah, the beef started over something else, which I'm not going to fucking talk about right now because, Jesus Christ, it's Saturday night and we should be partying." Tucker chuckles. "I'm gonna grab a beer. You guys need a refill?" "I'm good," Hunter says. As Tuck heads for the counter, I pull out my phone and check the time. It's 9:30. I scroll through my contacts while Hunter starts talking hockey to me again. I think I still have Allie's number from when she was planning Hannah's birthday this spring. She'd sent about 100 mass texts outlining every mundane detail of the party. Yep, it's still in my phone. I saved her contact info as Wellesley's blonde friend. I should probably change that to bondage girl. I type a quick message. "Me. You make it back to the dorm okay?" It's a dumb question because she left our place this morning, so of course she made it back. Still, I'm surprised when she answers right away. Her. "Yep, here now." Me. "Shitty weather tonight. Probably good you're staying in." She doesn't respond to that. I stare at the screen in frustration, then wonder why I care. I'm the king of casual hookups. I rarely ever want a repeat performance after I've slept with a girl. And if there's one girl I shouldn't sleep with again, it's Allie. Not too many things in this world make it on my scared shitless list, but Garrett's girlfriend is solidly positioned in the top three. Wellesley won't be happy if she finds out I slept with her best friend. And if Wellesley's not happy, Garrett's not happy, which means I'll have to deal with G tisking at me all disappointed-like. Logan will follow his lead, and then Grace will jump on the Dean is an ass bandwagon, and the next thing I know, I'll be taking shit from all directions. That's reason enough not to go there. But my sexed up body is being a stubborn asshole. I want her again. One more time wouldn't hurt, right? Shit, or maybe twice. I'm not entirely sure how many times it will take to get her out of my system. All I know is that every time I think about her, my dick gets impossibly hard. Beside me, Hunter has transferred his attention to a group of girls at a nearby table, and I can't help but be proud when one measly nod from him causes the trio to saunter over to us. My boy's got game. "Which one of you is going to buy us a round?" one of them teases. She's tall and blonde and rocking a mini dress that stops mid-thigh. As Hunter opens his mouth to respond, all the lights in the bar flicker ominously. I frown and glance over at Tucker, who's just rejoined the group. "Is it the apocalypse out there or something?" "It's coming down pretty hard," he admits. The lights stop flickering. I take that as my cue to bail, because if we're dealing with a potential power outage, I'd rather be home when it happens instead of on the road. Besides, for all my talk about partying, I'm really not feeling the bar tonight. "Hey, I'm headed out." I clap a hand over my roommate's shoulder. "See you back at home." I don't miss the disappointed pouts on the girls' faces, but I'm confident they'll forget all about me once Hunter and Tuck turn up the charm. I exit the bar a minute later and realize Tuck wasn't kidding. In the 10 seconds it takes me to get to my car, I'm soaked to the bone, dripping water all over the Beamer's leather interior. The bolts of lightning streaking across the sky are so bright they make the act of flicking on my headlights almost redundant. I could probably just let those blinding white flashes light the way home. I fish out my phone again. Me. "Weather's worse than I thought. Keep a flashlight near you in case power goes out." Oh, for Christ's sake. I sound like I'm writing a shitty survival guide. Why am I even texting her? Allie responds with, "Thanks for the tip," then follows it up with, "Seriously, stop worrying about me. I'm reading on the couch, under a blanket, snug as a bug in a mug." Me. In a rug. Her. ? Me. Snug as a bug in a rug. That's how you say it. There's 5 whole seconds of radio silence, and then my phone rings in my hand. I'm grinning as I answer the call. "Why would the bug be in a rug?" she demands. I snort. "Why would it be in a mug?" "Because that's a cozy place for it to be. If it's in a rug, someone might step on it."
"If it's in a mug, someone might drink it."
Are we writing a bad Dr. Seuss book right now? Laughter bubbles in my throat.
Sure fucking sounds like it.
Well, either way, I think my phrasing is better. I'm momentarily distracted by the rain hammering against the windshield. It's falling harder now, and a second later, all the lights in the parking lot go out. I curse softly as darkness surrounds my car.
"Shit, Malone's just lost power," I tell Allie. "Make sure you stay inside, okay? And don't go wandering around the halls of Bristol House if the power goes out."
"What? You think a serial killer is going to sneak into the dorm and hunt me down?" She's quiet for a beat. "Even if that happened, I'd probably be able to take him."
I snicker. "Uh-huh, sure."
"Hey, I'm fierce," she insists. "My dad and I took part in a really intensive father-daughter self-defense program when I was 14.
Father-daughter self-defense, is that even a thing?
"No, but we made it one. He traveled a lot when I was growing up, so whenever he was home, he would come up with creative ways for us to bond. But since he's Mr. Macho Man, we were only allowed to do boy things, like fishing or riding dirt bikes or learning how to beat each other up. Anyway, I'm hanging up now. I want to finish reading this play." She pauses. "Drive safe."
"Wait," I blurt out before she can end the call.
"What is it?" I stare at the rain that's sliding down the windshield, wondering what the hell is wrong with me. And I lick my suddenly dry lips and say,
"I want to fuck you again."
I can hear her breath hitch over the extension. My body tightens in anticipation. I think about the sweet curve of her ass filling my palms, the way her nipples puckered when I flicked my tongue over them, the tight grip of her pussy squeezing my cock. A silent groan shudders through my chest. Fuck me, I'm lusting hard for this chick. And now I'm holding my breath waiting for her answer. After a long pause, her annoyed voice says, "Goodbye, Dean." I growl in frustration when the line goes dead.
5. Allie. My heart is pounding as I hang up on Dean. I hadn't expected him to say that. At all.
I want to fuck you again.
Well, of course he does. I'm amazing in bed. But there's no way I'm sleeping with the guy again. Not after I spent the entire day feeling like Hester freaking Prynne. Only the self-judgment I've been hitting myself with is far more scathing than anything that poor woman ever got from those Puritans. God, I'm not cut out for casual sex. I feel defiled. Except that's ridiculous, because if anyone was defiled last night, it was Dean. Not only did I seduce him, but I tied him up and rode him like he was my own personal amusement park ride. I'm such a slut.
You're not a slut.
Okay, maybe I'm not. Maybe I'm just a 22-year-old woman who had some no-strings fun for once in her life. The only problem is, I like the strings. Sex and relationships go hand in hand for me. I'm all about the snuggling and inside jokes and talking late into the night. I'm a card-carrying member of Team Boyfriend. And after last night, I can honestly say that Team One Night Stand sucks balls. The sex was incredible, but the shame it left me with isn't worth the orgasms. Sighing, I toss my phone on the couch cushion and pick up the script I'd been reading before Dean interrupted. The student-written play will be my final performance at Briar. I'm one of two female leads, and even though the material is a tad melodramatic for my tastes, I'm looking forward to rehearsals. Ever since my theater debut in Boston this summer, I've been itching to perform in front of a live audience again. Which is just another contributing factor to the stress I've been under. I'm at a crossroads in my career, and I have no idea which path to take, damn it. When I started college, I asked my agent to concentrate on only finding summer projects for me. It would have been too tempting to drop out of school if a juicy role came along, and I wanted my degree. Now that I'm graduating, all bets are off. Pilot season kicks off around January, and Ira has already sent me dozens of scripts for sitcoms and Glee-style dramedies, along with several romantic comedy screenplays that normally I'd be salivating over. I always thought I was destined for comedic roles. I caught the acting bug when I was still in middle school, and all the bit parts I've landed over the years have been light and fluffy, highlighting my comedic timing and girl-next-door persona. I dreamed about being a rom-com queen, the next Sandra Bullock or Kate Hudson or Emma Stone. Until this summer, when a casting call went out for a super serious, super depressing play directed by Brett Kavanaugh, an Oscar-winning director and a freaking legend. Somehow, my agent made it possible for me to read for Kavanaugh, and to my total astonishment, I actually got the part. The heroin-addicted younger sister of the lead actress. The show only had a 2-month run, but it was a huge success. Since then, I've received a ton of offers to read for more dramatic roles, both on stage and for television. And someone told me Kavanaugh is developing another project for the stage, off-Broadway this time. Shit, why am I so tempted to veer off the course I set for myself? Considering dramatic roles is one thing, but theater? Hollywood means more money, more recognition, Oscars and Golden Globes and Rodeo Drive shopping sprees. I stare at the stack of scripts on the coffee table. If I get hired for one of these pilots Ira sent over and the show gets picked up, or if I snag a role in one of these films, I could actually break out in the business. So why am I fantasizing about stage acting? I'm still lost in thought when my phone rings. I check the screen, and for a second I think it's Dean calling, until I do a double take and realize it's an S, not a D. Huh. My ex-boyfriend and my one-night stand literally have the same name with one letter replaced. I wonder if that means something. Sean's calling you, you idiot. Yeah, that's probably the more pressing issue at the moment. My chest fills with anxiety. I shouldn't pick up. I really, really shouldn't pick up. I pick up.
Are you okay?
Are the first words I hear. Sean sounds so frantic that I'm quick to reassure him. I'm fine. Why wouldn't I be?
I came by after class yesterday and you weren't home, and I texted you all night.
I know. I gulp. I spent the night at a friend's. Another gulp. I told you I didn't want to see you.
I was hoping you'd change your mind.
There's no mistaking the sheer torment in his voice.
Fuck, baby. I miss you. I know it's only been a couple days, but I miss you so much.
My heart cracks in two.
I messed up, okay? I see that now. I shouldn't have given you an ultimatum, and I definitely shouldn't have said your acting career isn't going anywhere. I was upset and lashing out at you, and you didn't deserve that. When I came to your opening night in Boston this summer, I was blown away. Seriously. You're so talented, baby. I'm an ass for saying that shit to you. I didn't mean it.
He's practically pleading with me now, and another piece of my heart splinters off. Sean,
you're the most important person in my life,
he interrupts, his voice thick with emotion.
You mean the world to me, and I want to fucking strangle myself for driving you away. Please, baby, give me another chance.
Sean,
I know I can fix this. Just give me a chance to...
Sean! He stops.
Babe,
he says uncertainly. My throat goes impossibly tight, almost like it's trying to prevent me from saying my next words. But the guilt is eating me alive. I can't just sit here and listen to him beg, not when I'm feeling this way. I swallow again and force my vocal cords to cooperate. I slept with someone last night. Deafening silence greets my ears. It seems to drag on forever, and with each second that ticks by, my stomach churns harder. Did you hear me? I whisper. There's a choked noise.
Yeah, I heard you.
We both fall silent. Pain and guilt continue to stab my insides. I involuntarily flash back to the day I met Sean. It was during freshman orientation. And I remember thinking he was the cutest boy I'd ever seen, with his floppy brown hair that he's since cropped, twinkling hazel eyes, and the cutest butt on the planet. Being the outspoken weirdo that I am, I commented on the cuteness of said butt, and his cheeks had turned redder than his Red Sox t-shirt. We had dinner in one of the meal halls that night. A week after that, we were a couple. And now, 3 years later, we're broken up, and I've just confessed to having sex with someone else. Where the hell had we gone wrong?
Who?
The strangled question startles me. What?
Who was it?
Sean says flatly. Discomfort tightens my chest. It doesn't matter who it was. I won't be seeing him again. It was... I take a breath. It was a stupid mistake, but I thought you should know. He doesn't answer. Sean? A ragged breath echoes through the line.
Thanks for telling me,
he mutters. Then he hangs up. It takes a while before I move the phone away from my ear. My hand shakes uncontrollably as I rake it through my hair. God, that was... brutal. A part of me wonders why I even told him. It's not like I cheated on him. I didn't have to tell him. In fact, I could have spared him the pain he must be feeling right now if I'd simply kept my mouth shut. But I've always been honest with Sean, and some stupid, guilty part of me insisted he deserved to know. An anguished groan flies out of my mouth. My heart hurts again. The guilt is even worse now, a tight, crushing knot in my stomach. Rather than pick up my script, I grab my iPod instead and shove in my earbuds. Then I yank the blanket up to my neck and put Miley Cyrus's Wrecking Ball on repeat because it pretty much sums up how I feel right now. Wrecked.
Dean. Ah, look at him. Gee, he's so precious when he's sleeping. Like an angel. A really slutty angel. Wait, do angels even get laid? And if so, are heaven orgasms a million times better than earth orgasms? I bet yes. Doi, where do you think rainbows come from? Whenever you see a rainbow, that means an angel just came. Ah, makes sense. Sort of like how whenever a bell rings, an angel gets its wings. Exactly like that. I crank one eye open and direct it toward the doorway. I can hear you, you know. My annoyed voice puts an end to the most bizarre conversation I've ever heard. Oh, good, you're up, Logan says. Of course I'm up, I grumble, rubbing my eyes. How am I supposed to sleep when you two fucktards are standing at the foot of my bed talking about angels blowing their loads? Garrett snickers. Like I'm the first one to ever wonder about that. Trust me, you are. When'd you guys get back? Logan props one massive shoulder against my doorframe. About an hour ago. Gracie needed to be back early because she has a show to produce tonight. I nod. Logan's girlfriend works as a producer at the campus radio station. Which reminds me. You planning on calling in and professing your love again? I ask mockingly. He sighs. You're never gonna let me forget that, are you?
Nope.
Though I wish someone had recorded that radio segment so I could pull some quotes from it and torture him with them. After screwing up and nearly losing Grace last weekend, Logan had won her back by calling the advice show she produces and saying the sappiest shit imaginable. I worry about him sometimes. I toss the covers aside and slide out of bed buck-ass naked. My roommates continue to lurk in the doorway. I find a pair of clean boxers and tug them on. I swear to God, if you tell me you've been watching me sleep for the last hour like a bunch of creepers, I'm calling the cops.
Coach called, Garrett tells me. He said he's been trying your phone all morning, but you weren't picking up. He wants you at the arena in an hour.
Why? I ask warily. Garrett shrugs.
Fuck if I know. Maybe he found out you got wasted this weekend. I assume you got wasted, right? And wants to ream you out.
How would he even know? It's not like he's got people tailing us.
Dude, Coach is like the spy master from Game of Thrones. His sources are endless.
Shit. Hopefully I'm not in the store for one of Coach Jensen's long-winded lectures about keeping my nose clean. We're not allowed to drink or dabble in drugs during the season. But that doesn't stop any of us from getting plastered or smoking the occasional joint. Still, I've never failed a piss test or tarnished the team's good name with my partying, so I'm not sure why Coach is constantly on my case about it. Hannah still here? I ask Garrett as I hunt down some pants.
Nah, she went home. She's having a girl day with Allie.
I'm glad my back is turned because the moment he says Allie's name, my dick actually goes half-mast. Wonderful. I'm turned on by the sound of her name now?
You didn't do anything stupid when she was here, did you?
Garrett's tone is lined with suspicion.
I fucked her twice, so yes?
I bite my tongue and throw on a t-shirt, followed by a navy blue briar hoodie.
I was a perfect gentleman.
Logan snorts.
Well, that's a first.
Fuck you very much. I happen to be skilled in the art of gentlemanry.
That's not an art or a word.
Logan rolls his eyes and disappears from the room. But Garrett stays behind. He studies my face for so long I shift in discomfort.
What?
I mutter.
Nothing, he says.
But he still wears a suspicious expression as he ducks out of my bedroom. When I pop into the bathroom to brush my teeth, I realize that the purple hickey on my neck is still very, very noticeable. Had Garrett seen it? But so what if he had? Anyone could have sucked on my neck this weekend. There's no reason for him to suspect it was Allie. Goddamn Allie. I told her I wanted her again and she'd hung up on me. That doesn't happen to me, ever. I'm Dean De Laurentiis, for fuck's sake. I can snap my fingers and a dozen chicks appear, begging to ride my dick. Last time I was at the campus coffee house, the hot barista handed me a free coffee and then offered to suck me off in the stockroom. So what the hell is Allie's problem? I spent way too much time last night wondering if she's playing hard to get. I mean, it's not like she hadn't enjoyed the sex. I've never been with anyone who showered my dick with so much glowing praise. Oh my gosh, I want to marry your cock. Best dick ever. Dean, you're making me come. Her throaty cries run through my head on a perverted, boner-inducing loop, and I grip the towel rack with one hand as a groan slips out. The toothbrush in my mouth falls into the sink. My cock tense in my pants and nudges the porcelain, needing to make contact with something, anything. I wonder if Coach would be pissed if I was late to meet him because I was jerking off. Probably. 30 minutes later, I swipe my student ID in the keypad at the hockey facility, sipping on the coffee I grabbed on the way here. The wide corridor is deserted, and my sneakers squeak on the shiny floors as I head to the back of the building. I walk past the row of classrooms and the screening room, bypass the kitchen and weight rooms, then duck through the massive equipment area. Our facility is state-of-the-art. There are half a dozen big cozy offices that Chad Jensen could have parked his ass in, but for some reason, he chose this modest office tucked away near the laundry room. I knock on the door, only opening it when I hear Coach's gruff, "Get in here." The last player who waltzed in without knocking got a tongue-lashing that the rest of us could hear all the way from the showers. I like to think Coach uses the office to jack off, and that's why he insists on privacy. Logan hypothesizes that he has a secret office family that's only allowed to venture out in the wee hours of the night. Logan is an idiot. "Hey, Coach, you wanted to see me?" I halt when I realize we're not alone. I'm not caught off guard often. I'm a go-with-the-flow kind of guy, which means it takes a hell of a lot to shock or surprise me. Right now, the only flow I'm going with is the rush of anxiety that travels through my blood and seeps into my bones. Frank O'Shea rises from the visitor's chair and flicks his cool gaze over me. I haven't seen him since my senior year of high school, but he looks exactly the same. Dark buzz cut, stocky build, severe mouth. "De Laurentiis," he says with a curt nod. I nod back. "Coach O'Shea." Jensen glances between us, then gets right down to business. "Dean, Frank's coming on board as our new defensive coordinator. He's filled me in about your history at Greenwich Prep." Coach pauses. "I decided it would be prudent if you two aired out your issues before practice tomorrow." I can only imagine what O'Shea had to say about our history. Whatever it was, I'm positive it was both inaccurate and in no way favorable toward me, because O'Shea's version of the story is so skewed it makes the stories in the National Enquirer seem like well-researched academic papers. Coach Jensen steps to the door.
"I'll leave you to it."
God damn it, he's leaving us alone? Would have been nice to have a witness around in case O'Shea tries something. After all, this is the man who clocked one of his own players in the empty parking lot of a high school. I was 18 at the time. I didn't report it because I understood why he'd done it. But that doesn't mean I've forgotten about it, or forgiven him for it. O'Shea doesn't speak until the door latches firmly behind Coach.
"So, are we going to have a problem here?"
I set my jaw.
"You tell me."
I force myself to add,
"Sir?"
His dark eyes flash.
"I see you're still the same insolent smartass you were when I coached you."
"With all due respect, sir, I've been in this office for all of 5 seconds. I don't think you can make that judgment." My tone is polite, but inside I'm seething. I loathe this man, which is so fucking ironic because I used to worship him.
"There isn't a problem on my end," he says, as if I hadn't even spoken. "The past is in the past. I'm willing to wipe the slate clean if that makes for a more conducive training environment."
How generous of him.
"All I ask in return is that you treat me with respect and listen to me when we're on the ice. I won't tolerate any insubordination."
His mouth pinches in a frown. "And I won't condone any shenanigans. Jensen said you have quite the reputation as a party boy, which doesn't surprise me." He makes an unflattering noise. "But if you want to keep your roster slot, I expect you to be on your best behavior. No booze, no drugs, no brawling. Understood?"
I jerk my head in assent. "As for our former issues, they will not be discussed."
O'Shea levels me with another cold glare.
"Not between us and not among you and your teammates. The past is in the past," he repeats. I shove my hands in my pockets. Can I go now? Not yet. He moves toward the desk and picks up a thin folder. Either I'm imagining it, or there's a smug gleam in his eyes. Two more things, and rest assured, Coach Jensen is in complete agreement about this. Uneasiness tickles my stomach. First, we're moving you to the second line with Brodowski. What? I balk. O'Shea holds up his hand. Let me finish. I slam my mouth shut, fighting to control my rising temper. I'm no longer seething. I'm fucking enraged. There isn't a problem on his end, my ass. I've always played on the first line with Logan. We're the two best defensemen on the roster, a dynamic duo for Christ's sake. Brodowski is a junior who needs so much work, I'm surprised he's still on the team. Jensen trusts me to work with this defense and make decisions as I see fit. My old coach barks at me. The second line is weak. Kelvin and Brodowski aren't gelling, and each of them will benefit from being paired up with players of your and John Logan's caliber. Did Coach happen to mention that he tried this already during preseason? I can't help but say, snidely enough to make him frown. I was paired up with Kelvin for the St. Anthony's game. It was a disaster. Well, you won't be with Kelvin this time, will you? He counters in an equally snide tone. I'm putting you with Brodowski, and the decision is final. I'm doing what's best for the team. Bullshit. He's doing this to punish me, and we both know it. What's the second thing? He blinks. Pardon me? You said there were two things? It's a struggle to keep my voice calm. You're rearranging the lines, that's number one, what's number two? He slants his head as if trying to decide if I'm being disrespectful again. Dude doesn't even know how badly I want to slam my fist in his jaw right now. It's taking all my willpower not to. O'Shea flips open the folder and extracts a single piece of paper. The satisfied gleam returns as he passes it to me. I scan the page. It's a photocopy of what looks like a practice and game schedule, but it's not for our team. What's this? I mutter. Starting this week, you'll generously be volunteering your time to the Hastings Hurricanes. The what? The Hastings Hurricanes. That's the hockey team at Hastings Elementary. Middle school league, 7th and 8th graders. Breyer has a community outreach program in which our student athletes volunteer to coach or act as assistant coaches with local sports teams. The senior who's been working with the Hurricanes, she's the left wing for the Breyer's ladies team. She came down with mono, so we need to replace her. Jensen and I think you'd be the perfect candidate to take over. I try to mask my horror. I don't think I'm successful because O'Shea is openly smirking at me now. It's two afternoon practices a week, and game day is Friday at 6. I went ahead and peeked at your class schedule, and it doesn't interfere with the Hurricane schedule. So we're all set. He tips his head. Unless you have an objection? Damn right I do. I don't want to spend 3 days a week coaching a bunch of middle schoolers. This is my senior year, for Christ's sake. My course workload is massive, and I'm already practicing 6 days a week with my own team and playing my own games, which doesn't leave a lot of downtime. But if I object to this, O'Shea will no doubt make my life miserable, same way he did back in high school. Nope, it sounds like fun. I force the words out and resist from giving him the finger. He nods in approval. Well, look at that. Maybe you have changed. The Dean De Laurentiis I knew only cared about one person, himself. The jab stings more than it should. Sure, I can be a selfish bastard at times, but I hadn't done anything wrong back then, damn it. Miranda and I had been on the same page, until suddenly we weren't. But I guess it doesn't matter who was in the wrong, does it? Because it's pretty fucking clear that Frank O'Shea is never going to forgive me for what went down between me and his daughter. Chapter 6. Dean. First thing I do after I stalk out of the arena is call my older brother. It's Sunday, so I try his cell first, though there's a good chance he's at the office. Nick works long hours at the firm, including most weekends. I think he's trying to impress our dad with his dedication to the law. And honestly, I think it's working. The cheerful voice that slides into my ear, however, doesn't belong to Nick.
Dickie, yay, I haven't spoken to you in ages.
The nickname never made me cringe when we were kids, but now that we're adults, it's fucking mortifying. As far as I'm concerned, once my little sister learned how to pronounce Dean, our folks should have ordered her to kick Dickie to the curb. Then again, ordering Summer to do anything pretty much ensures she'll do the opposite. My sister is a stubborn brat.
Why are you answering Nick's cell? I asked suspiciously.
Because I saw your name and wanted to talk to you first. You never call me anymore. I can envision the pout she's no doubt sporting, and it brings a smile to my lips.
You never call me either, I point out.
Summer goes quiet for a second, then she heaves a colossal sigh.
You're right, I don't. I've been a terrible sister.
Nah, you're probably just as busy as I am. I head down the cobblestone path toward the back of the training center, making my way to the parking lot.
I have been pretty busy, she relents.
I hear a loud snort over the extension.
What was that? I ask.
Nothing, just Nicky being an ass. He's been driving me nuts all weekend. Has he always been this uptight, or did it happen once he became a lawyer?
She says lawyer as if it's a dirty word, though to Summer it probably is. My sister had declared at the age of 12 that law is hella boring, and 8 years later, her stance remains the same. She only agreed to attend an Ivy League college to placate our parents. But last we spoke, she told me she wants to go into interior design after she graduates.
Compared to you, everyone is uptight, I tell my sister. Which isn't to say I approve of all the batshit crazy things you do.
Summer's 2 years younger than me, but she gives me a run for my money when it comes to grabbing life by the horns and seizing the day and all that crap. I'm surprised our parents haven't disowned her yet. A thought suddenly occurs to me.
Why are you in Manhattan? Shouldn't you be at school?
I felt like visiting my big brother.
Her tone is way too innocent for my liking.
Bullshit.
It's true, Summer protests. I wanted to see Nicky. And I want to see you, too, so don't be surprised if I show up on your doorstep sometime soon.
She pauses.
Actually, I'm thinking of transferring to Briar.
An alarm goes off inside me.
Why? I thought you were happy at Brown.
I am, but, yeah. Summer sighs again. I'm on probation.
I halt mid-step.
What did you do? I demand.
What makes you think I did something?
There's a sniff over the line.
Save your little miss innocent act for the parentals, I snicker.
Not that it works on them anymore either. Now tell me what happened.
Let's just say there was an incident at the sorority house. Togas were involved.
I choke down a laugh. Can you be more specific?
Nope.
I groan in exasperation. Summer.
I'll tell you all about it when I see you, she chirps. Nicky wants to talk to you now.
Summer, she's already gone. My brother's deep voice comes on the line half a second later.
Hey,
he says.
What did she do?
I ask him. Nick gives a hearty laugh.
Oh no, I'm not spoiling it for you. All I'm going to say is, classic Summer.
Fucking hell, I'm not sure I even want to know anymore.
Do Mom and Dad know?
Yep, they're not thrilled about it, but it's not like she got kicked out. It's just 2 months of probation and 20 hours of community service.
The last bit distracts me from Summer's woes. Speaking of community service, I quickly fill him in about O'Shea's new gig at Briar.
Shit,
Nick says when I'm done.
Did he mention Miranda?
No, but it's obvious he still blames me for everything that happened. Bitterness clogs my throat. Part of me is tempted to track her down and talk some sense into her. Maybe ask her to speak to her dad.
She didn't bother doing that back then,
Nick points out.
Why do you think she'd do it now?
Good point.
I know, but
I reach my car and jam my finger on the key fob to unlock the door. I'm still on edge from O'Shea's unexpected reappearance in my life, and I just want to get the hell away from the arena.
Whatever, I say darkly.
I guess it's stupid of me to think Miranda would want to help me. I'm the monster who broke her heart, remember?
You want my advice? Just keep your head down. Show up for practice, do what O'Shea says, and don't start any shit. Spring will be here before you know it,
and then you'll graduate and never have to see that bastard again.
You're right, I concede. It's not worth stressing over. I'll be out of here soon enough, right?
Yep. But let me know if he gives you any trouble, okay? I'll try to come up with a good reason to sic a lawsuit on him.
I chuckle.
You don't practice civil law. For you, baby brother, I'll make an exception.
I'm in a far better mood after we hang up. My friends like to mock me about being a rich kid from Connecticut. I'm sure they think my parents are snobs and my siblings are spoiled. But truth be told, my family is awesome. Both my parents are high-powered attorneys, but they're the most down-to-earth people you'll ever meet. Don't get me wrong, my siblings and I definitely had a ton of perks growing up. We had a nanny and a housekeeper. We went to private schools and got a cushy weekly allowance. But we also had to do chores and finish all our homework before we ever saw a dime. If our grades slipped, we'd be grounded in a heartbeat. And if we tried pulling that gimme whatever I want because we've got oodles of money crap, we were punished for it. The one and only time I demanded money from my dad, he turned around and donated my entire college fund to a charity for underprivileged kids. Then he made me clerk at his firm for the whole summer to earn it all back.
What did Coach want?
Garrett asks when I stride into the living room 15 minutes later.
To introduce me to the new defensive coordinator. I flop down in the armchair and glance at the flat screen. G and Logan are battling each other in a game of Ice Pro. And judging by the score, Logan is getting his ass handed to him.
We have a new defensive coordinator?
Logan instantly pauses the game.
And why did you need a private introduction?
I choose my words carefully.
His name's Frank O'Shea. He was my high school coach, so Jensen figured we'd want to catch up before O'Shea is officially introduced to the team.
Logan furrows his brow.
Okay, but why is he just coming in now? Season's already started. Seems weird to bring in a DC after we've already played our first game.
And lost, Garrett mutters.
Still just one game, Logan insists. It's not like we're in such bad shape that we need a new coach to turn shit around. This feels like a panic move on Coach's part.
Frowning, he turns to me again.
What's he like? Good guy?
He's the devil.
He's decent, I lie, then change the subject.
Where's Tuck?
Not sure. Don't think he came home last night.
Logan unpauses the game and refocuses his attention on the screen. I wrinkle my forehead. Tucker hadn't spent Friday night at home either. I wonder if he's seeing someone new, because he doesn't usually stay out two nights in a row. Since my roommates are distracted by the video game, I go upstairs and force myself to catch up on the course readings I'd fallen behind on. I spend the rest of the day alternating between reading and napping, only going downstairs to steal a few slices of pizza Garrett and Logan order in the evening. I don't know why I'm feeling so antisocial. Maybe I'm still edgy about O'Shea showing up at Briar. Or maybe it's because every time I closed my eyes for a nap today, I pictured Allie's sexy mouth wrapped around my dick, her smooth golden curves pressed up against me, her tits filling my palms. Why can't I get this girl out of my mind? Yes, the sex was phenomenal. Yes, I find her attractive. But phenomenal sex and attractive girls aren't exactly an anomaly in my life. Get over it, I order my dick when it yet again hardens at the thought of Allie. It twitches in response, taunting me. God damn it, I growl. Then I fumble on the bed for my phone and bring up the number I dialed last night. Allie picks up after four rings, her wary voice sliding into my ear.
Hey, what's up?
I let out a ragged breath.
I want to fuck you again.
Is this a thing now? You're going to call me every night and say that?
Maybe.
Shit, I'm cranky and horny and as confused as she is.
Say yes, baby doll. Just say yes and put me out of my misery.
I already told you it was a one-time thing. I'm not into casual sex. We had fun, sure, but...
Shit, I've got to go.
Call one of your puck bunnies and I'm sure they'll take care of you, okay?
For the second time in 2 days? She hangs up on me.
Allie. Who was that? I jump nearly 2 feet in the air at the sound of Hannah's voice. I disconnected the call when I heard her footsteps in the hall, but I hadn't expected her to appear in my doorway this fast. It was no one. Brilliant answer. She raises one dark eyebrow. No one? Telemarketer, I amend. Which is the equivalent of no one. She grumbles in annoyance as she heads for my bed. How do they even get our cell phone numbers? When I signed up with my phone provider, they had this whole section in their policy about how they'll never, ever give my number to a third party. Well, I call bullshit, because guess what? I get daily calls from airlines and clothing stores and all these companies telling me about their awesome sales and saying I won some bogus prize. Oh my God, and the worst one? This stupid cruise ship promotion that starts the call with an automated foghorn. It's awful. Hannah's tangent lasts for several minutes, and I'm grateful for it because it means she's too riled up to figure out I lied to her. And she's so caught up in her rant that she doesn't notice when I discreetly check the text message that pops up on my phone. Dean.
You really need to stop hanging up on me.
I text back. You really need to stop propositioning me. I know I'm a great lay, but get over it already. Him.
I can't. Trust me, I've tried.
Me. Try harder. Him.
Come on, baby doll. Just one more time. Think of how good it will be.
Of course it'll be good. He's a sex champion. But that doesn't change the fact that I'm not comfortable with casual sex. Me. Go away. I'm running lines with Hannah. Him.
Text me when you're done and I'll sneak into your dorm. Wellesley won't even know I'm there.
I'm startled to feel a sharp ache between my legs. The idea of Dean sneaking in and fucking me while Hannah sleeps obliviously in the next room is a turn-on I didn't expect. I ignore the unwelcome response and type, "Good night, Dean." Then I turn to Hannah and say, "Are we done bashing telemarketers? Because this script isn't going to read itself, babe." "Sorry, I can't help it. I hear the word telemarketer and I turn into a ball of rage." She sits cross-legged on the center of my bed and catches the script I toss at her. I remain standing. The opening scene requires my character to pace, and I want to get a feel for how talking while marching back and forth will affect my breath control. Hannah thumbs through the intro pages. "All right, who am I, Jeanette or Caroline?" "Caroline. Her defining traits are petty and insensitive." My best friend grins widely. "So I get to play the bitch? Nice." Honestly, I wish I was playing the bitch. My character is a young widow who lost her husband in Afghanistan, which is the more emotionally draining role. Thanks to this breakup with Sean, my emotion well is dangerously close to depleted, and I'm scared I won't be able to tap into it and do this role justice. My fear isn't off base. We're only 5 pages in and I'm already drained, so I call for a quick break. "Wow," Hannah remarks as she skims the next few scenes. "This play is intense. Everyone in the audience is going to be bawling the entire time." I collapse next to her and stretch out on my back. I'm going to be bawling the entire time. Literally, because my character weeps in every other scene. Hannah falls back on her elbows and a comfortable silence falls between us. I like it. Because I don't have this with many people. Even with Megan and Stella, who I consider close friends, one of us is always trying to fill the silence with conversation. I think it takes a certain level of trust to sit next to someone and not feel the pressing urge to babble away. My dad once told me that the way a person responds to silence reveals a lot about them. I always figured he was talking out of his ass because Dad has a habit of coming up with insightful-sounding adages and insisting there's wisdom in them, when half the time I know he's bullshitting me. But right now, I see the truth in his words. When I think of the silences I've shared with my other friends, I realize they really are incredibly telling. Meg breaks a silence with jokes, doing her damnedest to fill the lull with laughter. For as long as I've known her, she's resorted to humor whenever shit gets too serious for her. Stella fills the silence by barraging you with questions about your life. For as long as I've known her, she's avoided discussing herself if she could help it. I guess that's why it surprised me when she started dating Justin Cole, the football player Hannah had a crush on before she fell for Garrett. Stella has openly admitted more than once that she's afraid of intimacy. The thought of Justin has me turning toward Hannah. Hey, did Garrett ever own up to being wrong about Justin? She wrinkles her forehead. Where did that come from? I grin. Sorry, I was just thinking about Stella, and it reminded me of how Garrett was convinced that Justin had sinister motives. Didn't he insist that Justin was a slime ball? Yep, she sits up with a laugh. We actually talked about it a while back. I accused him of being subconsciously jealous of Justin. Ha, I bet he loved that. It's the only thing that makes sense, though. Justin is one of the nicest guys I've ever met, but Garrett insists he just misread him. Well, either way, I'm glad Justin turned out to be a good guy. Stella deserves to be happy. I hear the wistful note in my voice and hope Hannah doesn't pick up on it. She does. You deserve to be happy too. You know that, right? I know. I swallow the lump that rises in my throat. Her green eyes take on a hesitant light. Allie, do you regret breaking up with Sean? The lump gets bigger. It makes it hard to breathe, especially when I remember the agony in Sean's voice when he'd asked me who I'd slept with. No, I say finally. I know it was the right decision. We wanted completely different things for our future, and it wasn't something we could compromise on. Not without one of us resenting the other. Hannah looks pensive. Do you think you're ready to start dating again? I shudder out of breath. Nope, not even close. But God, what I would like is a distraction. I'm tired of being sad. I'm tired of wondering how Sean is doing and fighting the urge to call him. I might not want to get back together, but I hate knowing that I hurt someone I care about. I have this terrible habit of wanting to make everyone happy, even if it means sacrificing my own happiness. My dad insists it's an admirable quality, but sometimes I wish I were more selfish. I guess I was selfish on Friday night, though. My rebound sex with Dean was all about satisfying my own base urges, and as guilty and embarrassed as I felt afterward, I can't deny it was hella satisfying. Shit, maybe Dean's right. Maybe we should hook up again. Maybe I need a fling, I say aloud, just to test out the idea. Hannah's response is swift and scolding. You tried that, remember? After you and Sean broke up the first couple times. You hated it. It's true, I did hate it. But I didn't actually sleep with anyone, I point out. All I did was go on a bunch of crappy dates and make out with a few jerks. Maybe that was my mistake, actually dating those guys. Maybe this time I should pick a hot dude and bang his brains out for a few weeks. Just sex, no expectations. She snorts. Good luck with that. We both know you can't even make out with a guy without hearing relationship bells in your head. Also true. And why am I even contemplating this? If this is how Hannah responds to me broaching the subject of a fling, I can just imagine what she'd say if I admitted I'm considering a fling with Dean. The guy is a player to the extreme. Not only is he not relationship material, but I doubt he could even commit to a fling. I can't see him being exclusive to me. Which is absolutely non-negotiable because there's no way I'm sleeping with someone who's also sleeping with other people. Yeah, I need to nip this Dean idea in the bud. I don't know why he's so eager to jump into bed with me again, but I'm confident he'll get over it eventually. The guy has the attention span of a fruit fly and the affection-giving habits of a puppy, offering his sexual devotion to whoever happens to be holding the treat, by which I mean the vagina. As I return to my senses, I change the subject. Hey, what are you doing for Thanksgiving? Garrett and I are going to my aunt and uncle's place in Philly. My parents are flying in and meeting us there. Nice, sounds like fun. You'll be in Brooklyn, right? I nod. I spend every holiday in Brooklyn with my dad. I always look forward to seeing him, but this year I'm a tad worried because the last time we spoke, he insisted on cooking Thanksgiving dinner himself. Usually I'd be cheering over that announcement because Dad happens to be the best cook on the planet. But since he was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis 5 years ago, I've been doing my best to make sure he doesn't push himself. The only reason I turned down a free ride to UCLA's drama program was so I could remain within driving distance of him. The man is so damn stubborn, insisting he doesn't need help and that he can manage on his own. But I hadn't felt comfortable moving to the opposite end of the country once his remission periods became few and far between. Now, I'm even more relieved I stayed on the East Coast, because Dad's condition has gotten progressively worse this past year. Like most people who suffer from the disease, he was initially diagnosed with relapsing remitting MS. But now it's transitioned into the secondary progressive type, which means his relapses are more frequent and more severe than they used to be. When I visited him over the summer, I was shocked by the change in him. Suddenly, he was having trouble walking, when before it was the occasional loss of balance and mild numbness in his limbs. He had 2 attacks of vertigo when I was there, and when I pressed him, he admitted that the pain was getting worse, and he was experiencing the occasional vision problems. All this fucking terrifies me. I already lost my mom to cancer when I was 13. Dad is all I have left. I refuse to lose him, too. Even if it means chaining him to his recliner in our Brooklyn brownstone and forcing him to watch football while I cook dinner in his stead. Okay, break time is over. Once again, I need a distraction from my bleak thoughts. Groaning, I sit up and open the script to where we left off. Caroline is about to yell at Jeanette again. Hannah tucks a strand of dark hair behind her ear. For the record, if you ever lost your husband, I would never call you a crybaby and tell you to get over it. Her expression grows serious. In other words, you can keep moping about Sean for as long as you need to. I promise I won't judge you for it. Emotion wells up in my throat, but I manage to squeeze out 2 words. Thank you.
Chapter 7. Dean. For all his bullshit about the past staying in the past, it's painfully evident that my former coach is pushing a make Dean's life miserable agenda. The first practice with our new defensive coordinator runs an hour late, but only for the defensemen. While everyone else heads to the locker room to shower, change, and go home, O'Shea forces the D-men to stay behind for extra skating drills after announcing that we're the sorriest excuse for hockey players he's ever seen. When he finally dismisses us, my teammates and I skate off the ice, cursing and grumbling the entire time. We're all dripping with sweat, steam is rolling out of our helmets, and our mood is foul as we strip off our gear in the now deserted locker room. Decent guy, huh? Logan says sarcastically, echoing the description I'd offered yesterday. He was just showing us his dick is bigger than ours, I mutter. It's probably his way of trying to earn our respect. No, it's his way of punishing me for hurting his daughter, but I keep that delightful tidbit to myself. Not because O'Shea ordered me not to discuss it with my teammates, but because I'd rather not think about all the shit that happened with Miranda. Ironically, my relationship with Miranda O'Shea didn't just impact my high school life, but also my college one. Miranda is the reason I now spell out my intentions, or lack thereof, before every single hookup. Granted, I thought I'd spell everything out back then too, but clearly I hadn't articulated it as well as I should have. These days, I make sure women know exactly where we stand before their heads can fill up with fantasies about happily ever after.
You doing anything for dinner?
Logan asks as we hit the showers.
Grace is grabbing Chinese food in town and meeting me at the house. I think she's bringing enough grub for everyone.
Thanks for the invite, but I'm having drinks with Maxwell. Not sure when I'll be home. The conversation ends as we step into our respective stalls. I've barely finished soaping my balls when Logan shuts off his water. Jeez, dude just showered like someone had offered him $1 million if he could lather up and rinse off in less than 30 seconds.
Later,
he calls as he slaps a towel around his waist and ducks out of the shower area. I know he's eager to see Grace, and for some reason that brings a strange flutter to my chest. It's not quite jealousy, not quite resentment. Disappointment, maybe? I get it. My best friends are in love. They'd rather cuddle and make kissy faces at their women than hang out with the boys. And I'm not pissed at them for it, not in the slightest. Thing is, this feels like the beginning of the end for us. After my older brother graduated from Harvard, he lost touch with his college friends within months. Teammates he once would have laid down his life for hardly speaks to them now. Friends from law school? They exchange one email a month, tops. I understand that friends drift apart after college. People get married, they move away, they make new friends and develop other interests. But I hate the idea of not having Garrett or Logan or Tuck in my life. I also hate this cynical part of my brain that points out the inevitability of that outcome. I'll be in law school next year. I won't have time to sleep, let alone see my friends. Garrett will most likely be living in another city playing in the NHL. Logan, too, if it works out with the Providence Bruins, the farm team that has already stated their interests in signing him after he graduates. It's only a matter of time before he's called up to the pros and moving away, too. And who knows what Tucker plans to do after college. He might move back to Texas for all I know. Fuck, why am I feeling so philosophical tonight? Maybe it's because I haven't had sex in 3 days. Sadly, that's a long time for me, and my balls don't like it. I blame Allie, of course.
Dean!
A familiar voice calls out to me as I leave the team facility. I spot Kelly sashaying up the path toward me, looking like she's stepped off the pages of a New England clothing catalog. A thick red scarf winds around her neck, and she's rocking a pair of brown leather boots and a long gray peacoat. Her blonde hair is up in a messy knot, with long strands framing her face. She's hot as fuck, but truthfully, I haven't thought about her or Michelle since I slept with Allie. Still, I don't feel guilty that I haven't called or texted her, and Kelly doesn't scold me for it as she greets me with a warm hug. Like I said, chicks know where I stand these days. And ironically, when Kelly and Michelle approached me at Malone's, they'd given me the no-strings speech before I could even open my mouth. They'd straight up told me they only wanted my dick, and I was happy to oblige.
Did you have a good weekend?
She asks. I shrug. Could have been better. If a certain someone didn't keep turning me down.
That's no good.
She smiles.
I have something that will cheer you up, though. My sister's in town. I told her all about you, and she'd love to meet you. She's staying with me and Michelle.
There is no way to misinterpret the invitation. Ah, well, I'm not sure how to respond to that.
Did I mention she's my twin sister?
Holy hell.
Oh, and Michelle's down too.
Kelly winks at me.
Everyone always says 3 is a magic number, but I'm thinking 4 is even better.
I wait for my dick to respond. Fuck, I order it to respond. A semi, a ball tingle, a twitch, anything, damn it. But there's nothing stirring south of the equator. It's like my equipment just stopped working. Come on, little Dean, help me out, I plead silently. We're talking 4G here. Still flaccid. Apparently, little Dean isn't going to cooperate unless I give him what he wants. And what he wants, unfortunately, is not Kelly, Michelle, and Kelly's twin sister. It's Allie Hayes. That sounds amazing. Really. But I have to pass. I'm having drinks with a buddy tonight, I say ruefully.
Anyone I know?
Maybe Bo Maxwell. He's
the quarterback of our football team,
she finishes,
A seductive glint lights her eyes.
Invite him along. 5 can be just as fun as 4.
Oh, sweet baby Jesus. I want to be turned on. I pray for it to happen. But little Dean ain't having it.
As frustration forms a knot in my gut, I mumble another excuse, ask for a rain check, and then stomp toward my car, cursing my dick the entire time.
20 minutes later, I slide into the back booth at Malone's.
Sorry I'm late, I tell Beau. Practice lasted an extra hour.
Breyer's starting quarterback shrugs his big shoulders.
No worries, I just got here a couple minutes ago.
To my relief, the glass of dark ale in front of him has barely been sipped. As I shrug out of my hockey jacket and toss it beside me on the bench seat, a cute brunette waitress wanders over to take my order.
So what you been up to?
Beau asks after she leaves.
I haven't seen you since midterms ended.
I know, man. Our practice schedule has been brutal. We lost every preseason game and Coach Jensen is shitting a brick.
Fuck, I hear you. DeLuca is shitting bricks too, he admits, referring to his head coach. We have no chance of making the playoffs. Hell, I'll be surprised if we even play in a bowl game.
His face is gloomier than I've ever seen it, but there's not much I can offer in terms of reassurance.
The football team already has 3 losses under their belt. 1 or 2 maybe they could have come back from, but 3 pretty much torpedoes their chances of ranking this season.
Beau's blue eyes darken as he takes a long swig of beer and chugs nearly half the pint glass. I feel his frustration. I know what it's like to be an above-average player on a below-average team. Granted, the hockey season just started, and preseason games don't count for standings, but our ineffective gameplay and clumsy practices don't bode well for the upcoming season.
On the other hand, we're 3-time national champions, so it's not like I'll be crying in my pillow every night if we don't make it to the playoffs this year. Hell, maybe we're due for a bad season. Could be the hockey gods' way of keeping us humble.
Beau's situation is different, though. Breyer recruited him out of high school, and he blew everyone away during his freshman year. The coaches actually benched their senior quarterback and named Beau as the starter. He led the team to an undefeated season and took them all the way to the championship game. They lost, sure, but Breyer got to the playoffs after more than a decade of being shut out had been a major achievement. The following year, shit fell apart. Nearly all the star players on the team either graduated or declared early for the draft, leaving Beau with a weak offensive line and an even weaker receiving core. The team has been racking up losses ever since, which is disheartening in general, but even more so because Beau happens to be an incredibly talented quarterback. Unfortunately for him, he doesn't have the necessary weapons around him that it takes to win.
You had the opportunity to transfer in sophomore year, I remind him. LSU all but sucked your dick to lure you down there.
He scowls.
And what? Abandon my team? What kind of asshole does that?
An asshole who wants to play for the NFL, I want to say. But I bite back the remark. Thanks to the football team's recent performances, the chances of Beau going high in the draft or getting drafted at all are pretty slim. But I suppose his loyalty to Breyer is admirable. It definitely speaks to his character, that's for sure.
Subject change, Beau orders. Now, before I start crying in my Sam Adams.
As if on cue, the waitress returns to deliver my Coors Light. I'd asked for a bottle instead of a pint glass, and she makes an elaborate show of popping off the cap and passing me the long neck, bending low so I have a perfect view of her cleavage.
You boys let me know if you need anything else, she coos. I'm only a holler away.
We both check out her ass when she turns around. I don't even feel pervy about it, because she's pretty much inviting our appreciative glances by shaking that round bottom and swaying her hips as she walks. Her short black shirt reminds me of the other fine ass I saw this weekend, an ass that Beau, despite my numerous vocal warnings, is very familiar with.
I saw Sabrina at Malone's on Friday, I tell him. He shifts his gaze away from the waitress.
Yeah?
I nod. You still seeing her?
And by seeing, I mean no strings banging because Beau and I are kindred spirits. He doesn't do relationships either.
Nah, it fizzled out, he admits. She's too busy.
Busy doing what? As far as I know, Sabrina doesn't even have a job.
No clue, She lives in Boston, so I guess the commute has something to do with it, but it got to the point where she was only coming to see me once, maybe twice a month, and she disappears on the weekends, just like, poof, disappears. He shrugs. I figured she was playing hard to get, but now I legit think she's leading a double life. He pauses. You think she's CIA? I consider it. No conscience, black heart. Yeah, makes sense. He snickers. Ah, fuck off. She's a cool chick, even if she is impossible to read. If by cool chick you mean judgmental bitch, then sure. It's my turn to change the subject. Hey, so Justin came by last week, and he said there's this freshman wideout on the team who might amount to something. Beau nods. Johnson. He's fast, but he still has issues with securing the ball. We chat about our respective teams again for the next 10 minutes. I might play hockey while Beau is Mr. Football, but we're fans of each other's sports, so the conversation flows smoothly between us. After we've ordered a second round of beers, the subject shifts back to chicks, as I glumly relate to Beau the offer Kelly had made back at the arena.
What the fuck, man? You turned down an orgy? An orgy I was invited to?
He shakes his head at me.
Are you coming down with the flu or something?
I run my fingers along the neck of the beer bottle. Nah, just wasn't feeling it.
You weren't feeling an orgy. With twin sisters.
Disbelief drips from his tone.
Who the hell are you and what have you done with my man Dean?
I groan. I don't know, I'm screwed, dude. I hooked up with someone the other night and now I can't get her out of my head.
You're shitting me.
Nope, god awful truth. Beau continues to gape at me.
You think I like this?
I say defensively.
Trust me, I don't need this headache in my life.
I swallow a mouthful of beer. Hey, you know Twilight? He blinks.
Excuse me?
Twilight, the vampire book? His wary eyes study my face.
What about it?
Okay, so you know how Bella's blood is extra special? Like how it gives Edward a raging boner every time he's around her?
Are you fucking with me right now?
I ignore that.
Do you think it happens in real life? Pheromones and all that crap. Is it a bullshit theory some horn dog dreamed up so he could justify why he's attracted to his mother or some shit?
Or is there actually a biological reason why we're drawn to certain people? Like goddamn Twilight. Edward wants her on a biological level, right?
Are you seriously dissecting Twilight right now?
God, I am. This is what Allie has reduced me to. A sad, pathetic loser who goes to a bar and forces his friend to participate in a Twilight book club.
I don't know whether to make fun of you or refer you to a shrink,
Beau says solemnly. I've never met a dude who's actually read that book. I haven't read it. My sister was obsessed with those books when they came out. She used to follow me around the house and offer me recaps against my will.
Uh-huh, sure. Blame it on your sister.
Beau laughs before going serious again.
Okay, so you're horny for this chick. Why don't you just...